Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. We're going to be bringing you a live interview, just a few seconds, live from Oaxaca City, Mexico, with Free Speech Radio News Headlines producer Shannon Young, who's living in Oaxaca, Mexico.
Basically, as far as what's going on right now today, right now a march is in progress to commemorate the October 2nd, 1968 anniversary of a student massacre that happened in Tlatelolco in Mexico City. It's kind of got some creepy undertones for today, since there's been recent appearances by the military in the skies over Oaxaca City. I just a few moments ago could hear a helicopter, but I couldn't see it. But the helicopters first started showing up on Saturday afternoon. I happened to be in the central square right next to the cathedral when we just heard this, you know, thum, 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 and, you know, then these massive gray helicopters appeared. They're of a model that's used by the Mexican Marines. It's a Russian-made model that has, I don't know what the word would be for it in English, but it's for when troops can come out of the back end of it. And the back door of it, the back hatch, was open, and they were flying over really low over the city center for about 20 to 30 minutes. Later on that afternoon, a plane started flying over, and it had like a camera attached to the nose cone of the plane, and it made about four rounds of the central area and then left. That same plane, or at least one similar to it, showed up again yesterday and then through the night. And, you know, sometimes with twin prop or twin engine military planes, they'll run their engines out of sync to create this really noisy clatter. And that's what they were doing overnight. It woke me up, and it had me up for a while because they were running this really loud clattering airplane overhead in the early morning hours of today. Saw another helicopter today around 3 p.m. local time. We're on central time. Made a couple of rounds and then left. And like I said, there's one that I can hear, but I can't see right now. I live around the bend from the central part of town. And like I said, there's a march going on right now, so I don't know if it was overflying the march or what. But basically, there are upwards of 500 barricades. Some people say estimates are as high as 2,500 barricades throughout the city. And it's, I mean, as far as, like, major military action to happen in Oaxaca City, they would need to at least fly air reconnaissance, which is what they seem to be doing right now. The Interior Secretary just kind of, like, belittled the tensions by saying that these are just supply runs. But I don't know of any military supply runs that, you know, fly really low over cities and circle multiple times before leaving. So I'm not really buying the whole supply run argument. What's kind of on the horizon for the next couple of days is that the federal government has convened a meeting with all sides, saying basically that there's going to be a big offer made on the table, and if that offer isn't accepted, then there's going to be punishment, is what he said. You know, and the folks here, they're not going to back down until this governor leaves. They've put too much energy and invested too much time, and they've mobilized so many people to where it just doesn't make sense for them to back down now. The only way to make them back down is some pretty crushing show of force, which seems like a possibility at this point. So people are on edge, but, you know, the folks who are protesting are pretty solid in their convictions about how this governor needs to leave.
Now, the helicopters that are flying overhead, are these the same style helicopters that flew overhead on June 14th in the Desalojo?
No. On June 14th, it was like it had a very civilian-style helicopter. I mean, it's like the same kind of helicopters that you use in the States for, you know, traffic reports or you know, medical evacuations or whatever. It's, you know, these kind of like flimsy little, you know, helicopters. The ones that flew over on Saturday, I mean, they are if I remember correctly, MI-16 is the model number. It's a Russian-made helicopter that packs a bunch of troops into it. These were very, very large military aircraft.
And I understand that there's conflicting reports about who are is it military or is it police from surrounding states that are coming into Oaxaca?
You know, it could be both. What has been reported, I mean, it's for certain that they were Marine helicopters this last time, because there are only, I believe, 20 or 25 of these helicopters in Mexico, and they're all used by, there are five different Marine squadrons that use these specific models of helicopters. So the helicopters were definitely Marines. There have been troop movements, both reported by El Universal, La Jornada, like all of the major newspapers have been reporting troop movements into the bays of Huatulco and Salina Cruz, which are both about, you know, one's 5 hours, another one's 6 hours from Oaxaca City. Residents from those areas are saying that it's not just troops that are coming off of these, you know, big ships. It's also combat helicopters, tanks, you know, heavy artillery. And Noticias and La Jornada is reporting that just outside of town in Coyotepec, which is about 20 minutes outside of Oaxaca City, the Specialized State Police Force has been going through special training exercises, the UPOE. And the UPOE used to patrol regularly before this whole uprising started. And the UPOE, they're pretty much indistinguishable from military. They wear camouflage. They're heavily armed. They carry, high-power rifles. So those guys are apparently, there's 2,000 of them, going under special training exercises right now in Coyotepec, which is near where the airport is.
And I understand that Ulises Ruiz Ortiz recently made an appearance in Oaxaca in a special meeting of some sort.
Well, what he did, this was Sunday before last, that he just showed up out of the blue. And the Llano is a central kind of plaza here that's been undergoing remodeling. He jumped out of his little sport utility vehicle for about 5 minutes to just, you know, check out the remodeling efforts, and then headed off in the direction of this really expensive hotel. And when folks got word that he was near that hotel, they all mobilized towards that hotel and, basically started protesting. At that time, plainclothes, possibly policemen, definitely gunmen, started shooting into the crowds, and a couple of sport utility vehicles and a Jeep Cherokee were, rescued, I guess, with some folks in it. The head of the state legislature was being interviewed by Ricardo Rocha, who's kind of a famous journalist here. But it turns out that Ulises Ruiz, or at least Ulises Ruiz, says he wasn't in the hotel at the time, but at a restaurant nearby. But what did happen is that plainclothes gunmen were firing against demonstrators outside of the hotel. But that's the first time that he's really been in town for months at a time. The other time that I knew that he had last come to Oaxaca City was on the day of the federal elections. And that was just kind of a quick, press appearance. I'm here to vote, and then, he skedaddled out of town.
What's happening with the schools, the students, and the teachers? Have classes resumed for anyone?
There have been several attempts to try to restart classes, but the teachers held a consulta, which is like a consultation of its rank and file, and that was completed last week, and the overwhelming response was that we're not going back into our classrooms until the governor is gone. So, last Monday, some people who are part of like a parents association tried to force classes by using retired teachers, scab labor, whatever, to restart classes, and there was a pretty overwhelming response to prevent people from going to schools. So it's just not a climate to where you can hold classes here, especially if you don't have the support of the teachers and parents, really. I mean, and this is speaking as a parent, I mean, do you really want to drop your kids off at some school to be cared for by people who, I mean, you have no idea who they are. You don't know what their qualifications are. You don't know if they're, you know, qualified to be teachers or, you know, you just don't know who they are. I wouldn't leave my kid with somebody who is completely unknown. So I think a lot of parents had that kind of feeling, like they just didn't want to drop off their kids in that kind of a situation with people they didn't know.
Switching back to the situation at the barricades, I understand that there have been reports of kidnappings at the barricades as well as drive-by shootings. Can you confirm any of that?
There's definitely been drive-by shootings. With kidnappings, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it, but I can't think of an instance off the top of my head. There was a kidnapping instance yesterday where a student was pretty much yanked off of the street as he was walking along with one of his friends. There, some eyewitnesses to the scene also picked up three different shells. So he apparently was shot. There was blood at the scene as well. He was apparently shot and then just taken yesterday. And as far as I know, people don't know where he is. There were some human rights attorneys trying to find out if he had been arrested or if he had just been kidnapped. And as the most recent information I have is that his whereabouts is unknown. But yeah, drive-by shootings have definitely happened at the barricades. There's a video on Mexico Indie Media / Oaxaca of a drive-by shooting that happened the day after the massive takeover of radio stations, which would have been the night of the 22nd of August, that has video evidence of a drive-by shooting that actually killed a man. But yeah, there's definitely been drive-by shootings. And apparently there was an attack on a barricade at Frenamiel, which is an area along the highway that goes to Mexico City, and it's where the antenna for Oro is. Oro is the radio organization of Oaxaca, and inside of its buildings there are three radio frequencies inside of the building. And Frenamiel is where its antennas are, and that site was attacked yesterday by plainclothes. We don't know if they're paramilitaries. We don't know if they're plainclothes police. But yeah, folks were attacked there last night. And I think, oh, man, something that's really kind of weird that happened today is this morning there were three separate attacks on banks. Some folks, eyewitnesses says they had high-caliber rifles and everything through petardos, which are like small explosive devices at the windows of three different banks around town. It basically just shattered the windows, but they left a communique in one of the banks saying that they're like, you know, the armed resistance of the people of Oaxaca, some completely unheard of guerrilla group. And by planting a guerrilla group in this specific location at this specific time, it provides an excellent pretext for the use of military force against a civilian population.
I want to remind listeners that we're interviewing Shannon Young, and we're on 101.1 FM. Shannon, can you describe some of the impact for people?
I think that tourism's probably been the number one, you know, the number one sector that's been impacted, you know, by these 4 months of political crisis. I mean, it's the number one industry of Oaxaca, and if you basically create the conditions to where the number one industry isn't going to function, then it's going to affect the rest of the economy as well. It wasn't affecting so much tourism like the first couple of months, but since, you know, people started getting killed and you know, the barricades started going up, well, then it's gotten a little more, you know. The State Department, for example, issued a travel advisory not to come to Oaxaca, and I think it was in late August they issued the advisory. They renewed the advisory a couple of weeks ago. Canada has also advised citizens not to come. And so, yeah, so since tourism is the number one source of money here, other sectors of the economy have also been affected. There have been a couple of shutdown strikes by business owners to basically just ask for a solution. The first shutdown strike was in August. It was very effective. It was hard to, you know, buy a bottle of water in the city center even, you know, because everything was closed. But it had this basic mood of, you know, we just want a solution, we want a peaceful solution, we want things to just work out. There was another one about a week ago that was led by the Chamber of Commerce, which kind of had more of an air of do what you need to do by any means necessary to get us, you know, back into regular operating mode. And fewer businesses took part in that because it kind of had this underlying call for repressive action associated with it. But yeah, there are a lot of business owners who are hurting. You know, I know people who, for example, own restaurants who, you know, are sympathetic to the call to the governor being removed, but they have to close down just because they can't afford to pay personnel and have, you know, food rot in their refrigerators while their restaurants are totally empty.
Can you provide listeners with any advice, people that may want to help out with the situation in Oaxaca, what they can do from home, or if they are adventurous to go to Oaxaca?
I mean, as far as coming to Oaxaca, just to be aware that the situation is happening, you know, don't come with the regular, like, you know, I'm a dumb tourist kind of whatever. I mean, just to be aware, just to have your basic street smart, you know, going out to, like, if you want to go out and party at night at a bar, this probably isn't the best place to do that because you're going to encounter barricades on your way home. I haven't found it to be dangerous, you know. I mean, I haven't felt threatened in any way except for by military helicopters, but the protesters aren't dangerous. As far as what you can do from the U.S., is to keep an eye on what's going on here and to let as many people know about it. I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of people have been mentioning that they haven't seen this covered by their local media, and maybe they could write letters to the editor saying, well, this is a huge situation going on. Why aren't you covering it? And, you know, their reporters, some major papers in the U.S. have people based in Mexico City, and they're covering the situation from Mexico City, which means that, you know, they're pretty much relying more on what the government's saying or hearsay, or they're relying on reports coming out of Oaxaca rather than getting firsthand information. So perhaps letters to the editor would convince editors to, you know, send their reporters from Mexico City to Oaxaca City to cover it. But beyond that, I mean, just knowing what's going on and telling others about it is a good first step. That in Los Angeles, there's supposedly going to be a protest outside of the consulate of Los Angeles tomorrow. They're going to set up a plantón, a protest encampment, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., and they're going to stay there the whole day.
Can you talk about the march that's taking place from Oaxaca to Mexico City? What is the reason for that march? What are people asking for?
Well, I mean, the marches that have been going on here, there have been huge marches. They're called the Mega Marchas. And, you know, you mobilize, like, 700,000 people into the streets of the state capital of a state that only has 3.5 million people. I mean, that's a huge, huge march. And there's just no response. So I think that this march from Oaxaca to Mexico City was kind of a, you know, well, what's the next step? We're having these massive marches inside of Oaxaca, and nothing's getting done. Let's take it to the next level. Let's take it to the capital of the country. And so people are marching from Oaxaca City to Mexico City. They started on the 21st of September. They're in the state of Puebla now. They announced over the weekend that they're going to have to, you know, take a little more time than they had initially scheduled because they were thinking about arriving tomorrow in Mexico City. But it's just, I mean, that's a crazy fast pace to take 2 weeks from Oaxaca City to Mexico City. And so I think they realized that, you know, a couple of days ago, and they've, you know, set out a more reasonable pace for arriving. I went and I got some interviews with some folks on the march about a week ago, a little over a week ago, and I was really surprised at the amount of people. I mean, I thought that maybe just a couple hundred were participating, and no, I mean, it was upwards of 3,000. It was somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people are marching on foot. I don't know if, you know, some have kind of left since then because they were still within the Central Valley's region of Oaxaca when I went out and got interviews with them. But, I mean, it was massive. It was a lot of people. And, you know, Puebla as a state, that governor there is pretty much despised as well. You know, I've seen pictures in La Jornada of where you have state police, and in some cases even army, watching the march. you know. And so I think that they've kind of been, there have been attempts to intimidate them in Puebla, and the governor also called on people to not, you know, provide food or any kind of support to the marchers, and that's pretty much been ignored. And these marchers, I mean, this isn't the first time that there's been a march from Oaxaca City to Mexico City. Teachers have done it before in the past, but the big difference now is that the teachers haven't been paid in more than 6 weeks. So there's no income for a lot of these families, especially for families where both providers are teachers, and that's really not that uncommon. So this march, unlike the other marches, pretty much relies totally and completely on local people where they stop, you know, to provide food, to provide, you know, a place where they can, you know, sleep on the ground, to provide water. And I saw, you know, they would have a donations can and ask for people who were, you know, caught in traffic along the highway to give donations. And I saw a lot of people giving donations. This is really a grassroots effort, and it's gotten a lot of support from what I've seen.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and I do want to ask you if you had any final thoughts, but I did have one last question, and that was, can you explain any of the technicalities involved in getting Ulises Ruiz Ortiz to leave office?
Basically, you know, what they've tried is what worked in the past in the case of three other governors that were ousted from power in Oaxaca, and that's just a massive citizens' mobilization. That hasn't worked. He's refused to resign. The other thing is there's this concept, a legal concept known as creating ingovernability, because according to the Constitution, there are certain criteria that exist that the Senate can use to remove a governor from power. And, you know, and the inability to govern is one of those criteria. And I think that's been proven, you know, pretty well here in that, you know, he can't even use his own office. You know, that the headquarters of the state police, the state capitol, the legislative branch, the judicial branch, the town hall of Oaxaca City, the town hall of more than 20 cities in Oaxaca are completely blockaded. I mean, how are you gonna govern if you can't even get into your office? So, you know, the climate of ingovernability is definitely here. It meets that criteria, constitutionally speaking. But what is lacking is the will on the part of the Senate to take this up, because the Senate is governed by, an alliance between the PRI and the PAN. And, you know, there's a lot of people, it's pretty widely held sentiment that the PAN is backing up Ulises Ruiz in exchange for the PRI backing up Calderon, because there are a lot of questions as to whether Calderon really won the election. You know, Saturday, right after the helicopter overflight, people were gathered in the Zocalo. I mean, it's just like an impromptu rally, and they were chanting, "Si no hay solución, también caerá Calderón," which means if there's no solution to this, Calderón's going to fall as well.
Do you have anything else to close with, Shannon?
It's pretty worrisome. If Mexico wants to project the image that it's a democracy and that it's not listening to the population, which is mobilized in pretty unprecedented numbers here in Oaxaca, I mean, I've never seen anything like this. A democracy is listening to the people and, you know, taking into consideration what their grievances are. And this is not being listened to. It's not being taken seriously. And if you're going to send the military against a civilian population, something's really wrong. It's not just people in barricades who are unarmed or people in barricades who have sticks. I mean, this is the entire population of a city. And they're going to send in the military? So, I mean, I guess my thoughts here is, you know, what's going on here, you know? What's going on? And why is this being allowed to happen? And I don't have the answer to that. But, you know, I thank you for helping to spread the word about this, because this is something that I've never seen before. And I encourage your listeners to look for more information about this, because what's happening here is special, and it's not the kind of thing that needs to end in a bloodbath.
All right, well, you will be in our thoughts and prayers, you and all the people of Oaxaca. Thank you for giving us this interview, and we'll try and follow this story the best that we can.
All right, thank you.